This episode of Forecast is brought to you by Carbonite, the leader in online backup. Backup your PC or Mac offsite securely and automatically for a free trial offer plus 2 free months with purchase. Go to carbonite.com, offer code CAST.
What sort of future do you think we're heading for? How will we live as we slip into the 21st century?
Welcome to Forecast, episode 29. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I am Scott Johnson.
And this is the podcast where we predict the future with a couple of folks that round us out into four. Joining us today, Roger Chang, producer of Techzilla and my co-host on the East Meets West podcast. Roger, thanks for finally being on Forecast.
No, thanks for having me on.
I know you have many prognostications about the future. I'm interested to see what you've dug up.
Me too. I can't wait. It's awesome to have you on. We've been putting it off for as long as we can because I feel like these would be some pretty epic predictions from Roger today.
Great. So. Now I feel like now I have this huge weight of expectation upon my shoulders.
As usual. Also joining us, Scott Fletcher, President and CEO of CaraWorks Incorporated. And you might know him as the voice of many podcast voiceovers such as The Instance. Welcome, Scott.
Hello.
Hey, Scotty.
Pleasure to be here.
It's wonderful to have him on. If you don't recognize his voice, listen to just about any of my podcasts and you'll hear him do intros and little bit pieces in between. And he's on App Slap. He's on Film Sack. The man has a voice like no other. And it's just an honor to finally have you on Forecast with us.
It's a pleasure to be here. And I'll try to do the entire podcast as an announcer.
My next prediction. That would be great. That would be excellent. All right, let's start out with a prediction from a listener. Craig from Omaha wrote in, said, I predict that in the next 50 years, kilts will become the dominant men's apparel in the United States. How, you may ask? Well, I'll tell you. Geez, you're pushy. Corn is quickly replacing cotton as a staple crop in the American South. In time, all cotton production will be outsourced to Egypt. Due to high transportation costs, oil prices skyrocketing, men will give up wearing underwear. Kilt companies will swoop in to fill the needs of men everywhere, desperate for comfortable and affordable unbifurcated apparel. A new, liberated age will arise, and the plummeting birth rate will be stopped dead in its tracks. Admit it, you want it to happen. Craig from Omaha.
No, I don't. I don't want this to happen. This is a terrible idea. And besides, we don't necessarily need Egypt to get a ton of money real fast. Because that'll cause all kinds of war problems, I predict. And also, I'm having a hard time figuring out why kilts and not why...
Not like a muumuu or...
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's interesting because, you know, I kilts can make a lot of sense in certain areas. But as we all know, the United States is an area of wide and varied climate regions. So, you know, what might work well in, like, the Deep South... where it's humid and hot, may not so much in, like, you know, the northern Midwest during the middle of winter.
Yeah. And culturally, it's just strange that we'd go kilts. Like, why not just a wraparound of some sort? Or, you know, why do the Scottish get to have their last hurrah in the way of clothing in the future? I don't get it.
Right.
So Craig from Omaha, whatever, man.
Hey, I put my vote in for culottes.
I like that.
Yeah.
This is what I like about this podcast is Craig throws out the kilt prediction and everyone disassembles it. Well, actually, corn isn't going to be subsidized forever, Craig. And
Right. And the Skort Syndicate will never allow that.
Well, you know, why couldn't it be made out of a synthetic fiber that is self-cleaning? Why would it be based on some sort of plant fiber?
Yeah. Why not corn material? We're using corn for everything else. Why not make our new underwear out of that?
Because it'd be scratchy.
That's a good point. You make a good point there. Craig, if this is the right Craig from Omaha, and I think it is, he is also Bad Banana on Twitter, whom you should follow because he's absolutely hilarious. So thank you, Craig, for writing in. You can also send us your predictions. Email them if you want to email them, forecastpodcast@gmail.com, or just post them up on the blog for all to see at forecastpodcast.com. All right, let's get into the predicting. These are short-term predictions this episode, what we think will happen maybe in the next few years. Could be in your area of expertise, could be more sci-fi stuff. Whatever you think is going to happen in the short term, let us know. Let's start in alphabetical order. Mr. Roger Chang, what do you got for us?
All right, so now when you asked me for my predictions, you asked me to send three sets. Or three predictions.
Well, we've got you on for three episodes, so short-term, long-term, and medium-term.
Yes.
Okay. Short-term, long-term, and crazy. Well, I don't even know my own show anymore.
Yeah, I don't know what the – I guess crazy ass is kind of your sci-fi, you know, yes. what could happen. Well, okay, so my short-term prediction is that the economy will slump near the end of the year, and the Democrats will lose many seats in the House, perhaps maybe in the Senate in the next senatorial elections. I believe in the next few years that Iran will actually acquire a nuclear weapon, and the EU's increasing financial woes might force them to actually create a multi-tiered EU where you have basically the strong core economies, and then you would have a second tier of weaker, probably less fiscally stable countries.
If that happens, the EU thing, let me talk about that for a second. What do the second tier qualifying countries, like what will there be a huge fight, kind of like with Turkey trying to join the EU in general? Will there be this big battle over who should be considered, you know, second rate, and how is second rate determined? Is it by population? Yeah.
Well, see, and this is the thing, is a lot of the EU, especially the monetary union, is based on fiscal solvency. So, you know, essentially you could be looking at the countries that are running high deficits versus countries that are running low deficits and still making enough money to keep their finances in order, as opposed to, say, like Greece or Spain or Ireland, where they're running huge deficits and they run the risk of you know, collapse if not for a bailout by the central EU government.
Right.
Also, there would be, for the second-tier countries, less leg room. You'd have to buy your own meals and no hot towels.
Yeah, something like that. And basically what you would see is a huge amount of immigration from those second-tier into the first-tier EU countries as everyone struggles to make money.
Well, yeah, okay. The second-tier countries would gain points, and they'd be able to trade those in for upgrades to first-tier status.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if history has taught me anything, it's that everything needs to be compared to the United States in order for it to make sense.
If American history has taught you anything.
That's right. So, no, global history. So, if you look at the EU as sort of the second United States of the world, Turkey would be their West Virginia.
Actually, well, no, because West Virginia is already a state. Turkey is not part of the EU.
Puerto Rico.
Oh, so it would be like New Mexico. Or you're right, Puerto Rico would be good. But, you know, consider Greece would then be the Florida.
Interesting.
Actually, Greece is more like California in this case.
Yeah, no, it's definitely in California's coming budgetary crisis, actually middle crisis.
That's true. But where would old people go to retire?
That's right.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Florida needs to go a little more bankrupt, and then they've nailed it.
Maybe they're close and we don't know it.
Yeah.
All move to Greece and solve their problem. Who knows? But I would like to say this about your prediction about the Democratic seats being lost. You think that quick, like that much of a turnaround, right, where they're all going to go, Bush was great back in.
No. See, that's the thing. I am cautious about people say, well, you know, because they don't like Democrats, they're for the Republicans. I don't think that's it. I think people will be looking at their incumbents and say, hey, look, you know, I barely have a job. My spouse is out of a job. My neighbors are out of a job. People are looking at, you know, people like to think that when people vote, they think of this huge, you know, global worldview or even national worldview. When most people are looking and saying, well, how are you helping me? You know, my kids' schools suck. My job is tenuous. I want someone who can get things in order. And if they don't think they find that in their incumbent, they could, you know, people are going to say, well, hey, why don't I give someone else a chance at it, since obviously you can't do it. You know, it's people tend to vote with their pocketbooks. I know it sounds kind of crass, but I think it's
also, you know, it's a really safe prediction, Roger, and you may know this already, but always in the midterm elections after the election of a president, the opposing party does well. Doesn't always kick the other party out of power. It all depends. But yeah, you go back and look, every time there's always a swing back to the other party, and it's because of those reasons you're talking about.
You know, I was always hoping that there would be more independence. You know, people would be so sick of the Democrats, so sick of the Republicans, that you would actually see a genuine, you know, maybe not a third party, but at least, you know, a third viewpoint. on some of these issues or some of these
seats. This may be the shortest term prediction we've had. I know Molly Wood had a pretty short term Obama prediction in her episode. But
even hers was like a 4-year prediction.
Yeah. So well done, Roger.
Well, you don't know that until it happens.
Well, no, but I mean, no one's made that short term of a prediction, like something they'd have to be called on pretty quickly.
Yeah, you were literally doing it. The only thing we could do better is next month someone will go, next week I'll buy a new car or something, and that'll be the shortest we'll have.
Oh, you could always say, like, after this podcast is over, I'm going to go home.
Yeah, that's not a prediction. That's an intention. That's for our other show, Intenchcast.
Intenchcast, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I like that. I like the triple play. Now, did you pick three predictions for each of the three categories?
No. Kind of. I have the long-term predictions, I got a few more, and then the crazy-ass prediction, it was a little more, Hugo Award kind of stuff.
All right. Good. You're in the right spirit of things. Well, we're going to get to Scott Fletcher's predictions in a moment, but first let me tell you this episode is brought to you by Carbonite, the leader in online backup. You can protect your future with Carbonite. Carbonite backs up your files automatically whenever you connect to the internet. You don't have to think about it. You don't have to run a process. You don't have to see if your thing's all plugged in or anything. It takes your photos, your music, your email, your financial records, all of that stuff, and puts them in the cloud for you. You can use it to recover your lost files later, restore previous versions of files. You can even access them remotely by a website or by an iPhone app. You get unlimited backup for your PC or Mac for less than $5 a month. That's $55 a year. So you could try it for free. You don't even have to pay that much. It's pretty cheap, but you could try it for free. Just go to Carbonite.com and enter the offer code CAST. You don't have to use your credit card, but if you decide to buy the service after the trial, you'll get 2 months free with that offer code CAST. So be sure to sign up for the free trial from the homepage. Get the 2 months free. Don't put in your credit card. Try it out. See if you like it. Carbonite.com. Once again, the offer code is CAST. Let's move on to our next guest's predictions. These are the short-term predictions. How short are you going to go, Scott?
I'm going to go 5, 10, 15, 20 years, maybe 20
good.
Years.
Good. A little longer term. Good. I like it.
Yeah, because I don't want to be held accountable for any of this stuff.
I mean, I complimented Roger, but frankly, that's just stupid.
Yeah,
that's,
Oh, you know, why don't I just pack up my things right now?
Yeah, I predict Roger is not here for the next episode.
Hey, so I have three themes. One is the commoditization of luxury. The second is the myth of time management. And the third one is the connected world. So here we go.
All right. Tell me, I'm dying to hear about this luxury thing.
Yeah. So my question is, when did food become a commodity? You know, over the history of man, we had to scrape. We had to work. Our main focuses were, according to Laszlo's hierarchy of needs, right? We had food. We had shelter. That was our main focus, and we had very little time for anything else. Now, we have all this crazy time for these other things because these central needs have been commoditized. Paperclips, coat hangers are commodities. Shoes are even a commodity in this part of the world. But in other parts of the world, it's a luxury. Kids all over the world don't have shoes, and we would arrest parents if the parents did not provide their children shoes. So that continues. I think we're going to start making more of our stuff, and not like homemade, crafty sort of knitting a beer cozy. We're going to be, fabricating things at either a neighborhood sort of craft area where, I need a replacement for my car windshield wiper. You can go buy one, but nobody makes them anymore because people can go down to their local fabrication shop and just make one. Bring in the broken one. Some little craftsman guy with a goatee makes one.
Or print them, right? They have those 3D printers. So that may be what the guy at the shop has. He's just like, hold on, let me download that spec.
So this short-term future is obviously dependent on, but also will thrive based on technology that will let us replicate things and in a way that's actually usable and useful, not necessarily just resin models or whatever, but actual metal, rubber, synthetic fabrication of some sort is going to be required to see your future through.
Right. And the core of the device, I mean, you're not going to fabricate an iPod, but you're going to fabricate the case, or you're going to fabricate the mount or the thing that goes on your shelf. So the commoditization of the, I don't know, the variety is what comes in there. Well, I mean, and go ahead.
No, it's interesting because, for example, computers, for the most part, are commodities now. Back when they were introduced as home computers, they were considered a luxury, something that people with a lot of money, a lot of wealth could spend money on, but not something that people necessarily saw as a must-have item in order to work their way through life. You know, back in the 80s, you didn't have to have a computer in order to do your job, to pay your bills, to educate. Now it's kind of seen as almost a necessity if you want to move through higher education, if you want to do certain tasks, like if you're a salesperson on the road, you need to have a laptop. If you are actually in any kind of job, I don't see one where you don't need a computer unless you're like dealing with something where it's straight, you know, manufactured. But even then, the machines are controlled by computers. So, you know, it's totally easy to see as people move forward. You know, certain things that used to be seen as a luxury will become a commodity.
And these things will, this kind of connectivity and this kind of localization of technology seems to lend itself to a community-based sort of replenishment of the things we need as commodities and therefore luxuries. So in other words, you know, the internet, for example, has given us this way to sort of reach out to the rest of the world. But as we've reached out, we're kind of at that limit of reaching out, and we're now sort of reaching locally again. The big ad race for Google and others is local search, and you know, it seems like local is everything moving forward. And so maybe, Scott, you're onto something about it being, you know, going from things like search and stupid stuff like that, basically glorified yellow pages, to ultimately being this guy up the road makes you know, easy chairs with his computer. I'm going over there to get that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And speaking of connected, I'm going to jump around. I think very soon, it's not going to be a 100 or 500 year sort of time frame. I think it's 10 to 15 to 20 years where quite literally everyone on the planet, from the richest man in the world to the poorest farmer in the middle of the desert in a fourth world country, will be connected. No doubt about it. And go ahead.
Oh, no, I agree with you. I don't think they'll be connected in the same ways, however. For example, like each of us talking right now has a computer, has an internet connection. I could see something along like a mesh network and mobile phones where people interact and interface online through a handheld device rather than a laptop or desktop, a traditional style PC.
Sure. And who uses a traditional style PC anymore unless you're in the graphic arts or broadcast or computer development? Or, you know, word processing, I guess, but yeah.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Tom's recording this whole thing on his notebook right now. Yeah. The only reason I've got a big Mac Pro rig and Wacom and stuff covering half a desk is because I'm doing illustration all day, and I kind of need those sorts of tools, and I don't know where all that's headed, but truthfully, regular old computing, and if the iPad's any indicator of this, is moving to formats and forms that don't really resemble the heavy desktop, the thick monitor, and the stuff of old.
Right. And we went from not having an iPhone, which is, you know, how is the world going to measure time from, you know, 2005 and the iPhone to now. In 5 years, we went from not having an iPhone to now having an iPad. What's the next 5 years and the years after that? And with WiMAX and long distance communication, there's no reason that people all over Uganda and Ethiopia can't be walking around with an iPhone. But to your point, does that really solve problems? And I don't know if having everyone connected in the world at the same time answers any particular problems.
I think it will offer new avenues and it will help some. But I mean, a lot of those issues that afflict, you know, parts of, you know, central southern Africa, you know, parts of Asia, parts of South America. I mean, those are things that are systemic and not something that can be fixed, you know, in the span of a month, a year, or even like 5 years. It's, I mean, if you look at, you know, the situations where you have people don't even have access to clean drinking water, don't have access to food, to any kind of, you know, basic elements that we consider necessary for survival, you know, having an iPhone is not going to help. Right?
Yes and no, Roger. I think that's a very glib and easy thing to say, and it's not it's probably not wrong, but there is quite a bit of evidence that having communication technology, even just like the simple candy bar phones that are now quite common, does solve quite a few problems because you're able to coordinate better, which helps you if you're trying to make a new business, or you're able to look up some information, some basic information if you have some access to the internet, which can give you plans and knowledge for farming and things like that. So it's not like these things are a waste. In fact, they are very important and very helpful in improving situations.
You know,
but they're not a panacea. If that's what you're saying, then I can see that.
What I'm saying is that I don't think they're going to be a negative, but I don't think they're this huge benefit in the same way that other. I mean, yeah, people can have access, but to take advantage of all that, you need to have a stable government. You need to have some sort of order. And if you have.
Well, one of the ways you get a stable government and get people organized and have order is to have them able to communicate.
But that works the other way around, too. I mean, there's been situations where mobs have been keyed in using, you know, cell phones and pagers to meet up. For example, when there are all those immigrant riots. Or against the South African.
You can always find one example of a bad use, but that doesn't mean that that's the most common use.
No, I know, but I think that goes same the other way. I mean, there are plenty of examples that show communication helps, but you know, it's not. I don't think it's going to be one of these things that will have this huge impact as, say, good governance and having, you know, a stable society. I mean, I'm not saying it's a detriment, but I don't think it's going to be this huge, you know, watershed moment that everything is going to hinge upon.
Hmm. I disagree. I'm gonna get in your face right now.
Oh, let's go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm tired of getting in his face on East Meets West, so I'm trying to hold back.
So in addition to coordinating effort, you know, the guy in Ethiopia can tell all of his friends, hey, I found water, or hey, do you have any extra water, or... You know, why won't my crops grow in this frickin' sand? He can get help and he can coordinate groups. And that's really where the power of the United States has garnered and gotten all the power together. We were able to coordinate effort. When you have disperse people who can't get together and coordinate their efforts, the other opposing force, if they're better organized, will crush them.
Well, and even in our case where we've been weak, has been times and places where we're terrible at coordination. And part of that is lack of connectivity, you could argue, lack of universal connectivity. I mean, a lot of people would say that some of the big failures that happened in New Orleans were not just cultural and not just governmental, but also just how those communities were connected in the first place. And I don't mean just simply everybody had a good internet connection, but I think that's part of it. And, you know, when the storm hit, there was a lot of sort of who's where and what's what, and why don't we know this? And I think that argument is valid even here, where we're least organized and I guess sort of inclusive is where we have the biggest problems, in my opinion.
Agreed. And the other benefit I see with everyone being connected is just simply social awareness. So you're sitting there with your iPhone on Twitter, typing up a post about eating at Qdoba or the new Iron Man 2 show, and you see a post come across from some guy who you might be following over there in third world land. It really helps keep your life in perspective if you see people... expressing their needs and what's important to them while you're sort of living your life. And how will we deal with that? How will I deal with it? I'll probably just quit using Twitter or
People do what they do now. They filter it out. I mean, you know, people can have access and people are inundated with that type of information depending on the sites they visit and the type of information they selectively pick up, and it's quite easy for people to tune out things that don't directly matter to them. It can be disheartening for someone to hear about, you know, someone who's struggling to make ends meet or suffering some political or you know, natural disaster issue. And it's you know, people are going to feel solidarity, but, you know, it only goes so far. I mean, you know, technology can help connect people, but in the end, it still requires people to actually actively move on that information. And if people are apathetic or disinterested, or, you know, just don't freaking care, it's not gonna affect people. It's gonna affect some people. People already predisposed to those types of viewpoints. Yeah, but for other people who've always been like, yeah, it doesn't involve me, why should I care? They still might have that very viewpoint.
I see what you're saying, Roger, which is, you know, just throwing a bunch of communication at the problem doesn't fix everything. It's not going to be the solution to all the issues. But I think, you know, mine and maybe a little bit of what Scott's reacting to is you state it as if, and therefore, you know, it's worthless. And
no,
I know
no,
that's
I'm not
what
but
you
see,
mean.
I never said it was worthless, but I think it's one of those things where, you know, you...
So don't bother giving them phones. It's not going to help them. That's not what you mean, right?
No. What I'm saying is you need to build up and help create a society where those technologies will have the largest impact.
Yeah.
If you don't have...
And part of how you do that is with that technology. It's a chicken and egg problem, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, it's interesting to see, like, the most advanced countries in the world still run into... you know, those issues, even with all, you know, I mean, Katrina was a perfect example. We're the most quote unquote affluent nation on this planet. And we still couldn't square that one situation away when it, you know, it's in our country. It's, we have access to all these resources and still we failed. So,
yeah, I think that was more a case of everyone else thought that the other person had the ball.
But see, that's what I'm saying.
We failed relative to ourselves. But if you compare this disaster to other disasters in other parts of the world at other times, you'll find we actually probably fall somewhere in the middle in the response, if not near the top. I mean, it's not as good as we have responded in the past.
So
I don't know if that's a fair example or not. I mean, but it definitely shows that the technology alone doesn't solve
the problem.
I
think it's definitely fair if you consider it to other natural disasters that have occurred throughout the country, even within the same time span. I mean, it's all up to having, you know, an adequately organized and clear set of people who are in charge. You know, once you start, you know, if you have a million people and they're all on cell phones, great. But if you don't have any clear delineation of who's in charge, who does what, who you contact, then you're going to have this huge amount of crosstalk that's going to add to the confusion, that's going to chew up bandwidth.
That's true, technology or no technology, though.
Yeah.
I'd like to see those networks evolve. If you just airdropped a million phones into a country that didn't have any of that technology and they started using them, I would love to see how those hierarchical networks just evolve on their own, you know, and give them 4 months and I'm sure they'd have a communication network and a structure that rivaled any modern sort of world one.
Well, if this is any indication, I can't wait for our next two episodes, you guys. Thank you. This has been an awesome conversation.
Yeah.
Cool. No, it's great.
Getting all deep up in this grill. I like it.
If you would like to hear more of Roger's generalizations, you can listen to East Meets West every Sunday on Twitch.
Glib generalizations.
Glib dismissives. We're on Sundays at 8 p.m. Eastern on the Twit Network at live.twit.tv. And you also produce Techzilla, which comes out on Revision 3 every week.
Yes, right? There was an episode that came out Thursday. This Thursday, April 15th, or whenever this show gets released.
Yeah, yep. This show, if all goes well, will be out April 29th. So you can go back and watch that one from the 15th or whichever one's out this week.
Yeah, very nice.
And where do people go to watch those?
You go to www.revision3.com/Techzilla. That's TEKZILLA.
And, of course, Scott Fletcher, what don't you do? The bio you sent was like on a scroll. It took me all afternoon to read it.
It's a tome. You can see what's on my mind over at unthinkability.com. Or if your hospital is in the market for a diet office software, you can see us at menuplus.net.
Excellent. Good stuff. Don't forget to follow Scott Johnson on the Twitter.com/extralife.
That's right. You can follow me on that Twitter. I wanted to make mention, too, if you haven't noticed, there is a new member of the Frog Pants family in the form of The Final Score. It's a reboot of an old video game show that just recently relaunched and airs every Friday afternoon, starring me and Brian Dunaway. Definitely worth checking out. If you're interested in that, you can find out more at finalscoreshow.com.
You're going to have to start calling that Rabbit Pants, because you're rabbit just multiplying podcasts like rabbits.
Yeah, what can I tell you?
Don't do that.
Yeah, good stuff happening over there. And don't forget about me and Tom on Current Geek. We always have to pimp that. Good stuff happening on Current Geek at currentgeek.com as well.
Don't forget to leave comments at our website for this podcast, forecastpodcast.com, or send us an email to forecastpodcast@gmail.com. Scott and Roger will be back next episode with our long-term predictions. Check us out then.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
But it's only 32 years away.